Welcome to Issues and Ideas. I'm Larry Rutter. Today on the program, we're going to run, sip, and feast our eyes. We're going to begin with a preview and a look behind the scenes at an event taking place this weekend in SLO.
Nearly 15,000 people will be joining in the festivities.
Then we'll journey with Tom Wilmer to Paso to learn about Cabernet and Bordeaux varietals grown in the area.
You actually have the same soil here that you have in Bordeaux. You have what's called in France argilo-calcaire, which is calcareous clay, and you only find it pretty much in Paso Robles.
And we'll have the first of a two-part tribute to photographer Joe Schwartz. But first, we'll tie up our running shoes and warm up for a marathon. The second slow marathon and half marathon is this Sunday. A marathon is an exciting event for both participants and for spectators. And there will be many of them here in SLO this weekend. And so we're going to tell you about it. But what interests me as much is the huge amount of planning, selling, cajoling, pleading, and red tape cutting it takes to put on an event like this. So we shoehorned ourselves into the busy schedule of the race director 4 days before the event to tell us all about it. Welcome, Heather Hellman.
Thank you so much, Larry. It's nice to be here.
You must be right in the throes right now as we speak 4 days before the event with a million balls in the air.
Oh, yeah. It just all kind of seems to come to a head, you know, the last week. We know the last week of prep before our expo starts and all our athletes start to arrive on Friday that there's just going to be a lot of things going on, a lot of balls in the air to try to juggle. But we seem to get through them pretty well and we're in a good space, and we're ready.
Hey, give me some numbers. Number of actual entrants, what size crowd do you expect, and that sort of thing.
Well, between the three races, we have four races this year. We have a 5K, and we have a children's fun run on Saturday, and then we have the marathon and the half marathon on Sunday. But between all of those races, we'll have, I would say, 4,500 athletes participating, you know, in this weekend festivities. And from our statistics from last year, a lot of them bring 3 to 4 people with them for the event. So we're talking about, I would say, nearly 15,000 people will be joining in the festivities.
Then, of course, along the route, yep. There are places to watch the race. And then, of course, at the end where you have the expo and the finish line and whatnot, a ton of people there.
Oh, yeah. That's probably the best place to watch the runners come in. It's the finish line shoot, basically. And it's that bicycle path right there by the Madonna Inn. Our expo, we build up that front field, that beautiful field that they just planted. So it'll become kind of a little mini city for 3 days. And a lot of festivities going on there between, a concert on Sunday at the finish, lots of music kind of thing going on. So it's fun.
You can't do this just with paid staff, of which you have a pretty large staff, but you also have tons of volunteers.
Oh, my God. We could not do this event without our volunteers. It's really just 2 full-time and 1 part-time staff members, and then we've got a really solid core team of people that are our managers, and they're paid as well. But then the volunteer corps, it's really the community. I've always said this, and it's true, is it takes a community to do this event. We could not do it without our volunteers.
How many do you have?
We've got 700 volunteers at this point. We've had some big groups, bring people. Vandenberg Air Force Base is bringing a big, huge contingent, not only to participate, but to volunteer. We always get help from the Grizzly Academy. They're just great. Those boys and girls come out and they work hard for us, and we really appreciate it. We have a lot of Cal Poly University groups that show up. It's quite a thing. It's really great because it is really the whole community.
And the whole community, it starts at 6 o'clock in the morning. The actual gun goes off at 6 for the runners?
Yeah, it's 6 o'clock for the marathon and then 6:30 for the half marathon. Uh-huh. So it's a two gun start. So we line up the marathoners first and then we'll line up the half marathoners.
you've probably been to the New York Marathon. I've been there a couple times. There always are a lot of showboating that goes on, special groups that will run together and that sort of thing. Will we see some of that flavor in this one as well?
Oh, yeah. We did a big team initiative this year.
Oh.
And basically we got about 18 teams of 20 or more to sign up. So we have some local businesses that have really, really rallied behind it and have teams. The Madonna Inn has a team of 40 themselves.
40?
Yeah. Again, Vandenberg Air Force Base, they brought the biggest team. They have about 60 people participating.
Costumes at all part of?
You know, it's all on them. They can dress however they want. But, yeah, you'll see people sometimes in tutus. And we had a gingerbread man who ran last year. You know what? It's all in fun. They can do whatever they want to do.
We're talking with Heather Hellman. She is the director of the Slow Marathon. This is your second year. You feel like you're gaining momentum on this event?
Oh, yeah. Our participation has increased. I think the community is more aware of it and, you know, has embraced it. We've done our best to inform people of the road closures and hope that they have some patience just on that day. It's one day, but it brings so much to the community in terms of just community involvement as well as an economic impact. So we hope that people are starting to embrace this, but we're also catching the eye of national running industry community.
Any name runners? Any?
Well, we've got Dean Karnazes coming here this year. He's a Cal Poly graduate, and this is a man who is called the Ultra Marathon Man. And his one of his accomplishments is he ran 50 marathons in all 50 U.S. states in 50 consecutive days. But we're also starting to get some buzz going with the elite athlete field as well. When you get up into the, you know, the well-knowns, the Olympians and whatnot, most races offer prize money. So we're trying to work toward that so we can have an elite field here as well, because that would make it very exciting.
And how many people will actually be running on Sunday morning?
Sunday morning, it will be 3,200.
Boy, that could be a...
Oh, no, wait. I'm sorry. I added wrong. It's 3,400.
3,400.
Yeah.
And there's a staggered start, right?
Yeah. Well, the marathon, you don't have as many entrants in the marathon as you do in the half. The half marathon really is the big race. You know, even committing to 13 miles is quite a feat for people. I hope that, you know, the people who are out on the course and who see these people running know that these athletes have committed no less than 4 months of their lives to training. And one of the other things I forgot to name, the biggest team that's coming is Team in Training, which is the team that raises money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Mm-hmm. So they will bring over 200 athletes this year, and they're our official beneficiary for the race. Last year, they raised $500,000 for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society through our race.
How do they do that? I don't understand.
Well, they're giving fundraising levels.
That's incredible amount of money.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I can't imagine that to raise $500,000 on a local event here.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what they do is we give them, you know, some special concessions in terms of the entries, and then their athletes go out. And they have a fundraising minimum that they have to meet. So I believe it's maybe a little over $2,000. So each one of those athletes for Team in Training has raised no less than $2,000 apiece.
And not necessarily locally.
There's some local people who are participating with Team in Training, but they're coming from all over the state of California, from L.A., from San Francisco, from the Central Valley, from San Jose.
So you'll have a staggered start at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So the faster people would be at the front. Is that right?
Yeah, we line them up in pace corrals. So basically for the marathon, they'll line up according to their time that they think they'll finish. And then the marathoners will take off. And then at 6:30, we line the people up again according to the time they think they'll finish. And then the half marathon takes off at 6:30.
The New York Marathon is run by a charitable organization, and yours is not a charitable organization. But beside the Leukemia Foundation, do you see any other local beneficiaries to this kind of activity?
Well, one of the things that we do is we create a huge economic impact for the area in terms of the athletes that we bring in from outside who come here and spend money on souvenirs or restaurants or hotels or whatnot. So a lot of that is, you know, going into the tax base, which does support our fire departments, our police departments, our schools and whatnot. We do, we had a beneficiary last year for 5K. And so we've always, it's been part of our company to always give back to the community anyway. So we've donated quite a bit to charity locally here on our own. We've given money to Special Olympics. We do support a lot of cancer support charities here in town. We've given money to the Cancer Welfare Program, to Jack's Helping Hand, to the Community Cancer Foundation up in Paso Robles. So, yeah.
This will be a big event all weekend, several different races, but Sunday is the big event. And the biggest crowd, I think, will be at the finish line at Madonna. Now, you have a big expo that goes on at the finish line all day long. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, it's fun. This year we're going to have this big top 10 in the middle of the field, and inside it'll house all of our vendors who are coming with, you know, specialty running items. We'll have, you know, slow marathon merchandise. You'll have food vendors. You'll have, you know, drink vendors. All surrounded by, you know, making it a healthy lifestyle kind of expo. We call it the Slow Life Expo. We want to basically show people who do come from out of town, what is it like to be in San Luis Obispo? What is this San Luis Obispo all about? Mm-hmm. But we also have a concert stage. So we have a concert on Sunday. It's free. It's open to the public all 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But we've got the concert at 12:30 p.m. on Sunday with the Guy Budd Band. So we're going to have some blues out there.
Yeah.
We have a beer and a wine garden out there. We've got, you know, our local 805 from Firestone we're going to be pouring. And we've got our local slow country wine wineries coming out as well. So there's just a lot going on out there. We've got a speaker series this year, but that's on Saturday from 11 to 4 p.m. And we'll have guest speakers coming to talk about all different types of subjects. We've got Sandy Miller and David Drake from French Hospital who are coming out to talk about a heart-healthy diet. We've got Tara Kulikoff and Felicia Gomez from Pinnacle Training Systems. They'll be talking about nutrition in general. Dean Karnazes is going to speak at 2 p.m. So anybody who wants to come out and hear
Saturday.
Dean, this is on Saturday, wants to come out and hear Dean, they can do that.
Now, let's see. I'm setting my watch here. If I want to watch the winner across the finish line, what time do you recommend I get there?
Wow, that is on Sunday. So we're anticipating the first half marathoner, this is for the half winner, to come in around 7:45. So I would be there at 7:30 in the morning. And then shortly after, you'll see the first marathon male come in, I would say around 8:20 to 8:30, 2 hours and 15 to 2 hours and 30 minutes after they start. You know, people come out, they just bring their coffee and, you know, sit and cheer all these people who come in. It's really colorful. And
if you wanted to watch the race someplace else, there are a number of other places I know that you're recommending that people can watch the race.
Right. We just recommend that they go on to our website, slowmarathon.com, and go to the spectators page. It's under the races tab. And we have some recommended areas where people can, you know, either park and walk. The best place to me is the finish line, but there are places out on the course. We just ask that if they do go out and they park in certain areas, that they're not screaming and yelling too loud, because we want to be respectful of the neighbors out there and how early it is, you know, in the morning.
It's an exciting event. If you haven't gone to a marathon, if you haven't watched a marathon, it is a lot of fun. I highly recommend it. Thank you, Heather Hellman from the Slow Marathon.
Thanks.
You're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX. I'm Larry Rutter. Coming up in a few minutes, Chrissy Hewitt and Stephen DeLuque will pay tribute to photographer Joe Schwartz. But now let's visit the vineyards and the wineries of northern San Luis Obispo County with Tom Wilmer.
I'm Tom Wilmer. Right now we're with Linda Parker Sanpe, and we're here to talk about a new group, a new organization called the Paso Robles Cab Collective. Tell us about this. What is it?
Tom, the Paso Robles Cab Collective is a grassroots collaboration of passionate Paso Robles Appalachian wineries and vintners who produce superior quality age-worthy Cabernet and Bordeaux varietals. They are coming together April 26 and 27 to show their very best selections of Cabernet and Red Bordeaux wines.
Well, let's go visit some of the guys. Where are we going to start out and who are we going to visit?
Today we're going to drive up the Adelaida Hills of Paso Robles. We'll first stop and meet with Daniel Dow, winemaker at Dow Vineyards and Winery, and then on to Adelaida Cellars, where we'll meet with winemaker Jeremy Weintraub. Next, we'll head out to Creston and meet with Mike Mooney at Chateau Margine. Then we'll circle back into downtown Paso Robles, where we'll meet with Dave Parrish of Parrish Family Vineyards.
We're in Paso Robles, California, actually up in the mountains above Paso, at Dow Vineyards and Winery. We're here with Daniel Dow, proprietor and winemaker. Hi, Daniel.
How you doing, Tom?
I'm doing great. What a wonderful surprise it was for me to come up your road and discover your beautiful estate.
Thank you. Thank you. It's actually where winemaking started in Paso Robles back in the 60s.
And that was Hoffman was up here?
Correct. It was Hoffman Mountain Ranch, Dr. Hoffman, who came in here and started the first modern winery on this property.
Well, as you know, the reason I stopped by has to do with your Cabernet and the Cab Collective. What is that all about?
Paso Robles has an incredible terroir for ripening Cabernet. I've been so impressed with Cabernet Sauvignon from Paso Robles. Just 3 weeks ago, I had dinner with Gary Eberly, and we had a bottle of 1980 Cabernet Sauvignon. And 3 days ago, I had actually dinner with Dr. Hoffman himself with a 1977 Cabernet Sauvignon, and it was still youthful, so well-structured, drinking so well after 35 years. This terroir, we believe, here in Paso Robles can truly make some of the best Cabernet Sauvignon in the world.
You have to have some bias because you're here. But yet, it goes without saying that Paso Robles AVA truly is a world-class Cabernet producer, isn't it?
It totally is. Actually, that's really what is the majority of the grapes planted today in Paso is Cabernet Sauvignon, by far vast majority of what's planted. And it makes wonderful wine because you can actually achieve ripeness every year.
Would it be fair to say that Paso Robles in your terroir is a really close approximation of Bordeaux?
From a soil standpoint, depending on where in Bordeaux, you actually have the same soil here that you have in Bordeaux. You have what's called in France argilo-calcaire, which is calcareous clay, and you only find it pretty much in Paso Robles.
So it is very limited, very rare anywhere in California to find that clay soil.
Absolutely, and there are a lot of advantages with the soil, such as great minerality or the fact that you can hang the grapes for a long time and not have to add acid to them, so the wine is a lot more natural and more balanced. But it's also, overall, not just these soils, but if you look at all of Paso Robles, the warm days, the cool nights, holds acidity very well, produces incredible Cabernet.
Tell us about the Cab Collective event coming up this spring in Paso Robles.
So this is a very, very exciting event. It's the first time in Paso Robles that most wineries that produce Cabernet Sauvignon will get together on April 27th and pour not just their Cabernet, but their top wines that they produce. There are Bordeaux varieties, so Cabernet and also other varieties like Cabernet Franc. They will be pouring, all the wineries will be pouring their top, most expensive wines.
Thank you, Daniel Dow, the owner, the proprietor, and winemaker at Dow Vineyards and Winery in Paso Robles, California.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Right now, we're up in the hills above Paso Robles, California, off of Adelaida Road at Adelaida Cellars with Jeremy Weintraub, the winemaker. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi. Nice to see you, Tom.
It's great to see you, and especially to see what we see right out behind us. Tell us where we are.
It's a pretty special place. We are about 2,300 feet above the winery. We can see the winery in the distance. We're looking west toward the Santa Lucia mountain range. And if you can imagine just beyond that, the Pacific Ocean.
Let's talk about the history of Adelaida Cellars and your connection with the history of growing grapes in Paso Robles, AVA. This is really where it started in the modern incarnation.
Adelaida Cellars has been producing wine under that label since 1981. The Van Steenwijk family purchased the property in full in 1994 and has since purchased a few other ranches, one of which includes the oldest Pinot Noir vineyard planted in the Central Coast, and that's on the HMR ranch. It was planted in 1964.
And at that time, it was kind of a guess for him, wasn't it? He had an instinct.
I think at that time, in general, people planting grapes did not have the same technology that we do now to figure out aspect, different soil characteristics. It was largely, I would guess, you look at the dirt, you kick it a few times, and you stick your finger up in the air and figure out what seems like the right thing to plant. And in retrospect, Pinot Noir seems to have done terrific here. It's a north-facing slope.
Let's touch back to Dr. Hoffman for a moment before we move on, because you all really owe a debt of gratitude to him, don't you?
Absolutely. So I think everyone here in Paso owes a debt of gratitude to Stanley Hoffman for his foresight in picking an area that would produce world-class wine grapes.
Let's talk about Adelaida Cellars and specifically Jeremy and what you bring to the table, what your vision, what your passion is, what you're most proud of in the wines, the estate wines that you make.
Adelaida has fantastic estate vineyards, a whole range of Rhone varietals, both red and white, and the Bordeaux varietals. There's Cabernet Sauvignon and Petit Verdot, and Malbec and Cabernet Franc. And we have a handful of lesser-known varietals, at least for California. We've got a small Portuguese planting that's actually right below us here.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the Cab Collective that you become involved in. This sounds fascinating.
We're going to have an event on. We're really looking forward to that event. Try and showcase some of the fruits of our labors.
For further information, when are you open? Where are you located? And a website.
We're open every day, and we're located at 5805 Adelaida Road in Paso Robles, California.
Not too far out of town, is it? It's an easy drive.
No, we're a half dozen miles outside of town.
And website again?
Adelaida.com.
Excellent. Jeremy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Jeremy Weintraub, the winemaker at Adelaida Cellars, outside of Paso Robles, California. We're way out in the countryside in the Paso Robles AVA, and we're here with Mike Mooney, the owner of Chateau Margine. Paso Robles has been an extraordinary Cab producer for a long time.
Cab is the largest production. The Bordeaux are the largest producing grapes in Paso Robles. But you don't hear about the Cabs too much.
Why is that?
Well, a lot of the grapes over the years have been outsourced to other areas, Napa, Sonoma.
And they're grown here and then produced there.
Yes, and included in other blends. And there have been great wines over the years from Paso Robles. But now you're seeing some different producers, different techniques in the vineyards, different winemaking styles, and you're seeing a number of world-class Cabs in the area.
And even in the short time you've been here relative to the Eberleys and whatnot, you started in 97. It was a different world in Paso versus even today, true?
Very much so. Very different. And we came here with the purpose of making world-class Cabs. That was the number one priority. We hired the right consultants from the winemaking side, the viticultural side, to get us on the right track.
I'd love to have you talk a little bit about Chateau Margine, where the wine tasting rooms are located, and the wines that you produce and what's outstanding about them.
Well, we have two locations. We have an east side location, which is out in Creston, where we're sitting right now. And then we have a beautiful facility on the west side on Vineyard Drive in Peachy Canyon. Both locations share the same wines, and again, the passion being Cabernet. We love to have Cab on the bar when we can. It sells out very quickly. Cab is our focus. We do make some Rhone blends, combinations of east side, west side, and both. Mm-hmm. So we're not locked into a particular estate vineyard or a particular profile. We like the blending elements of all the various AVAs of Paso Robles.
All of your production is sold out without having to go into distribution.
We are winery direct. And our wine is sold 100% sold winery direct, with the exception of one or two small brokers. So if you come to Paso Robles or San Luis Obispo County, you will find our wines in most of the great restaurants and some fine wine shops.
Before we go, Mike, for further information,
we are ChateauMargine.com.
Mike Mooney, the owner of Chateau Margine, Preston, California, thank you so much. What a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Now we're in downtown Paso Robles, California, with David Parrish, the president of Parrish Family Vineyard. Hi, David. What a treat to come and meet you and discover kind of San Luis Obispo County history right here in you and your family. I had no idea that you went back to the early 20s in Pascadero as a family.
Yeah, that's right. My grandfather came here in 1925, and he was actually a grape grower and was asked to come here to see if they could grow grapes in this area. And my grandfather said, absolutely, this is fantastic. And, of course, it's been fantastic ever since.
And your grandfather is the one that planted the seed in your life as being a grape grower, true?
Yeah, that's right. I worked with him a lot, and he could grow anything, a green thumb. But, you know, he planted 540 acres in 1927. That's a lot of fruit for even today.
Well, let's go to David's world. You went to UC Davis and then went on into grape production, more so than grape growing, right?
Yeah, I had the just the timing and just the, you know, sheer luck of meeting some Napa greats at a time when they were expanding, and I got to work with the Mondal and Davi family, the Sterlings and so forth, and it was just fantastic. They were developing their fruit, trying to get it higher quality, and I was able to work with them and on the trellising side, and it was just a great marriage between us.
Very cool. So jumping forward 20 years in David's life, all of a sudden you decide to make a shift and you come down the coast to Tascadero, Paso Robles area. Why?
It's always been, you know, the place I loved since, you know, I was here so much in my youth, and I just loved this area, and I knew it was a great growing area. My grandfather always talked about how the grapes here did so well, and it was just in my heart to come back here and plant my own vineyard.
And today, Cabernet Sauvignon is one of your favorite close-to-heart grapes, isn't it?
Well, that's the first thing I planted back in 1995. I planted 40 acres, and the whole 40 acres was Cabernet.
Segue a little bit what's happening right now. You have the Cab Collective, a group of Cab people in the Paso Robles area. What's that all about?
Well, you know, Paso Robles is known for being a great area for Rhone, but in my heart, I always felt that a lot of this area was really a Bordeaux area. It has the right terroir, in other words, the right soil, the right climate, you know, the right amount of sunshine and heat units, and it is truly a great Bordeaux area. And what the Paso Robles Cab Collective brings forward is that they are emphasizing Bordeaux varieties, and that's really at the heart of why I'm growing here in Paso.
We're almost out of time. Before we go, tell us about the breadth, because you also are a lover of Chardonnay and some other great grapes. Tell us about your other wines that you produce.
I also make a Chardonnay and a Pinot, also a GSM, which is a Grenache Syrah Mourvèdre, also a Petite Syrah, also a Cab blend, which we call Silken, because some ladies coined that it was like silk, and also a 100% Cabernet.
If somebody wanted to come taste your wines and check out the Parrish Family Vineyard wines, you're located right in downtown Paso Robles. Tell us where and your tasting room hours, etc.
We open at 1, and we stay open until as late as 7. We're located at 1220 Park Street, right next to the park in Paso Robles.
Website?
ParrishFamilyVineyard.com.
Excellent. I'm going to have to come back and visit you again. This has been great. David Parrish, the owner of Parrish Family Vineyard, Paso Robles, California. Thank you so much.
The Paso Robles Cab Collective is a grassroots organization of winemakers and vintners who have come together to showcase their very best Cabernet and Red Bordeaux varietal wines. We hope you'll join us at the Cabs of Distinction event on April 26 and 27.
Website?
The website is pasorobloscab.com.
You're listening to Issues and Ideas on KCBX. Ears on Art is sponsored by Marshall's Jewelers, creating and selling fine jewelry since 1889. You can visit them on the corner of Higuera and Garden Streets in downtown San Luis Obispo.